But in 2016, when I had this moment when my son was 6 years old and I realized I was failing as a dad, if I'm being honest, I got 30 of my friends together and said, we're going to spend 3 days. And the only rule is you're not allowed to talk about your business. Only family, parenting, or marriage. That's it. And it was hard at first because we hadn't strengthened that muscle. We didn't even know where to begin. We're like, what do we talk about here? How vulnerable do we want to be? You know, at the end of the 3 days, we all just looked at each other and said, we need more of this.
What's up, gang? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mashazdeh. I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now listen, The Greatness Machine, we're about two things. Number one, people who are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world and doing both of these things despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews with game changers, and business leaders, you know, telling us their origin stories, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now. Why? So it can help you step into your greatness within your life, your business, and your career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years of entrepreneurship as a CEO and founder to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation, and I'm stoked to have you here with me. Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mashazdeh. And boy, do we have a special guest, repeat guest, actually, my main man, my brother from another mother, John Vroman is in the house. What's up, John?
Dude, let's talk about some interesting shit.
I was like, should we start on mushrooms and journeys or just go straight to being parents?
No, I mean, maybe it's one and the same, dude.
Oh, man. Do you mind if I do a little bit of housekeeping? We'll get started here.
Yeah, let's go.
So guys, those of you that are new to the show, the Greatness Machine, we're really about two things. People are living their passions and those who are creating greatness in the world. And John is neither short of passion or greatness. He's doing some amazing things with Front Row Dads, as well as other things in his life. For those of you who had listened to the last show, you'll be like, oh God, Darius got John back. For those of you that didn't, I would never stop anyone from listening to any of our past shows. But I was telling John before the show, I said, you know, the show's grown a lot since he and I first did the show almost 2 years ago. And I was thinking, you know, like there's a lot of listeners who haven't listened to the old shows. And, you know, they're probably not going to. So I'm just going to bring back the people who I think are fucking rock stars. And we're just going to hang out and really bring the work that you're doing to the world so that we can teach a whole new group of entrepreneurs and business people and listeners, which is really what comprises of most of our listeners, about the work you're doing, how this can support them. So, man, I'm so proud to have you back on the show. How are you doing, bro?
Right now, I feel energized. I've been getting a good sleep the last couple of nights, but I've been focused on that. I've been meditating before. I'm dozing off. So trying to get rest situated in my life because going is never a problem. I know you understand that. I know that we align on that. Slowing down has been my greatest work recently. And so that's a positive, man. I'm feeling rested today and excited.
Oh, I love hearing that. I want to talk about that once we get started here, but I want to give some background. So for listeners that don't know, so John and I met 2 years ago, actually about almost 2 years ago to the month. It was like summer of 2020. Depths of the COVID pandemic, and Amber Vilhauer and Isaac Stegman, who are co-friends of ours, introduced us. And it was a fast friendship. Like immediately we're like, dude, I like you. I like you. And we started going for walks around Austin. We both live in the Austin area. And I was like, you know, I have to say this, like John's, as many listeners know, I've gone through a pretty big, you know, transition in my life over the last couple of years. And John's been just such a great person to get to know and to really get to lean on and really get some insights into how you think about the world as you kind of think about what you do, which is really around businessmen being family men first. And so that really kind of drew me to John, and we had a really interesting first experience where I kind of told him my backstory, and I've gone down some really interesting roads with that since then. You've been a person when I think of. You know, I moved to Austin 5 years ago, and when I think of people who I've really connected with in a more visceral way, I you're on the top of that list, man. So it's been really cool to get to know you.
It was easy to just slide into some deep conversation you know, you just felt, I think there's an element of feeling safe with somebody, like, oh, I could probably tell this guy that story. And, yeah, you know, he's still going to stay, he's still going to finish the walk with me. And I think that's how a lot of relationships work in life. I think if you have psychological safety, if your kids feel safe with you, if your spouse feels safe with you, I know that I've felt the opposite of that with people where I didn't feel safe. And that was what severed the relationship. But if you can feel accepted by somebody, seen by somebody, and still loved by somebody, then you have the workings of an amazing friendship.
Yeah, man. And you couldn't have said it any better than that. That is definitely that you definitely have a you know, for whatever reason, I think we both kind of have that. We're both pretty good at making people feel safe, you know. Yeah. So I'm really grateful to have gotten to get to know you and to continue to get to know you. But for the listeners that don't know, I'm going to give John's formal bio. So John is, you're an interesting cat, man. He is the CEO and founder of Front Row Dads. And Front Row Dads is a mastermind and group of basically businessmen that are family men first. And it's all about winning at home, not just at work. They've grown over the last 5 years to include over 278 dads that are currently in the program or in the mastermind and in the group from 15 different countries from all over the world. And these are men who are choosing to put family first as they grow their businesses. And I've gotten the honor of getting to support that group and really getting to meet the members. And we're going to be diving deep on what that looks like and what the work you're currently doing, because I do think that you're one of the few groups I consistently promote. And what's funny about it, and this is unfortunately just through like me being disciplined about not adding, going into another group, I'm always hanging out with Front Row Dads, but I'm not even in Front Row Dads and I always promote Front Row Dads. So the answer there is I got to join so I can do it in earnest. Like, because promoting a fucking group you're not in is, people are like, why aren't you in it? I'm like, dude, I'm in too many groups already. God damn it, I'm being disciplined. But yeah, man, you're doing some awesome work with Front Row Dads, man. So I'd love for you to like just kind of take us back a little bit, and for people that don't know you, like tell us a little about your story about how did you get down into this cause right now of building this group of Front Row Dads and trying to really change the narrative around what a dad is.
Yeah. Well, to the benefit of your listeners, every time I tell the story, I try to tell it with fewer words. So here we go. This is my newest attempt. I think the real part of the story begins with, if I go back to the very beginning of speaking dad life here, I'm getting married and I'm having my first child. And that year I left a very high paying executive position to try to become a speaker and a coach and to run our charity that I had started called Front Row Foundation. So the story really begins around 2007 or so in this area, 2007. And what happened that year was I spent a ton of money and didn't make any progress. Entrepreneurship was much harder than I expected. Learning to be a speaker and a coach was harder than expected. And I found myself having my house foreclosed on, running out of cash quickly. It was a very tough situation. I then actually gained traction in business, won some speaking awards, and then within a couple of years was a very high paid speaker. The challenge was that I had developed now this new habit and routine around making money. And I was so terrified of not having money. And the plane had just taken off. So I kept saying yes to every opportunity. I mean, to the point where I was doing 50 paid presentations a year on the road, 150 days, making a ton of money. But my son was 6 years old and I had written a book and I was giving speeches around the topic of being a moment maker. This was the theme. And my wife said something to me that stopped me in my tracks, was a total gut check. And this was the beginning. This was the genesis for change. She said, "It feels like you're more of a moment maker for the rest of the world than you are for your family." And one of my friends said something that I felt was profound right around that same moment. He said, "It's important to first be famous at home."
Wow.
And when I started taking a look at my life, I started recognizing the patterns that were emerging. Like I would be at an event and somebody would say, "What do you do?" And I would immediately launch into speaking or coaching or the charity. And I wanted to say, I'm a dad and a husband, and then I do some other stuff. But that's not how I was living. And my calendar would show that what I really cared about was getting through another epic quarter, you know, another epic year in business. And I was gaining a lot of approval and security and control through those avenues. But in 2016, when I had this moment when my son was 6 years old and I realized I was failing as a dad, if I'm being honest, I got 30 of my friends together and said, we're going to spend 3 days. And the only rule is you're not allowed to talk about your business. Only family, parenting, or marriage. That's it. And it was hard at first because we hadn't strengthened that muscle. We didn't even know where to begin. We're like, what do we talk about here? How vulnerable do we want to be? You know, at the end of the 3 days, we all just looked at each other and said, we need more of this. And that's what turned into now 270 members in 15 different countries. And I'm benefiting from Front Row Dads like everybody else. I'm in the conversations like everybody else. I just wanted a group of people that I could learn with along the way. And I knew that I wasn't going to like solve a problem and then everything was going to be great, because when you wake up every day, you're different, your wife is different, and your kids are different. So you're in a new battle every single day. And having a band of brothers to be with you along that journey is important. So that's the short story of how we got to where we are now.
Wow. So let me ask you a question. So this was 2016 when you did that meetup.
Yeah. Yep.
And from when did you start? Did Front Row Dads start right after that? Or was it like a year?
I called it Front Row Dads, you know, because the whole thing before that was Front Row Foundation, Front Row Factor. Like my whole world was built around living life in the front row. And I thought, oh, a Front Row Dad is a dad who steps up and engages. A Front Row Dad's present and in proximity to the kids and to their family. And that's what it was all about.
And so starting, did you have to go and unwind all this other stuff? Or was it like,
so
how'd that work?
Well, because I wasn't making any money on Front Row Dads in the very beginning. You know, I charged the guys probably enough at that event to just cover my expenses. But after that, I thought, you know, I could help these guys. I can assemble community. That's a skill I've developed over time, right? I can do this. But my speaking business was going so well, and I knew it would take a little time to see if Front Row Dads really had traction. So I started landing the plane on speaking right away. It was like 1 year it's 50, the next year it's 40, the next year it's 30, the next year it's 10, and then I'm out. And that's kind of been the progression over those 6 years. Now I do zero public speaking, and Front Row Dads is my only focus. I even, you know, the charity I started back in 2005, Front Row Foundation, still is operating today, but I'm no longer on the board, nor am I on the staff of that charity. So it's completely operating outside of me.
That's pretty interesting. So, I mean, we never talked about this before. So I mean, we've had tons of conversations. So I didn't realize that you unwound that over like a half a decade.
Yep.
So, I mean, was it like, oh, okay. Because a lot of people who are listening, you know, might have something they're passionate about, but want to start doing it, but they're like, but I got this other thing I'm doing, which I have to pay, you know, I got to feed the family and pay the bills and I got to do this other stuff. Were you kind of freaked out by that? Or were you just like, oh, if it doesn't work, I'll just keep leaning into like speaking?
Both. Both were, you know, I have this really high tolerance for risk. I mean, evident of how I left my corporate job with zero income. I just knew that if I spent another day doing work I didn't want to do, I would rather be dead, you know, type of feeling inside. And so that was burn the bridges or burn the boats. You know, it was burned. I might've been burning a couple of bridges, burning the boats. And for me, you know, this transition, maybe I had kids at this point and was like, I did that whole jump off the building before and I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
So, you know, rather than hoping the parachute opened, I was a little more strategic.
And so, you know, in launching it, did you feel like it was like product market fit right away? Because
immediately. Then it was just, we needed to figure out what we wanted to do. And the other thing, here's the crazy part, Darius, was that as I'm growing Front Row Dads, I'm having all these moments of internal transformation for myself, recognizing who do I want to be? What do I want to do? And I'm surrounded by these amazing guys who are telling me, when you build Front Row Dads, build a business that you own that doesn't own you. Build a business you love. First, look at your family schedule, then build a business around that. Don't try to grow Front Row Dads and then figure out how to fit your family in like you did before. Do this the right way. And And that's what I started doing. That's actually how you and I got connected, was you were teaching these core values. And this was something I'd never built with previous companies. And in Front Row Dads, we were doing things the right way. I was not, from the get-go, I did not want to be the person who delivered the content. I didn't want to be constantly going on. I didn't want to be built on the fact that John would show up and do a Facebook Live and deliver parenting advice to the group. I wanted it to be where the men were helping each other to grow in life. And I was just one of the men. And that's how we built the company. So I do feel that we did it the right way this time, very intentionally, and through the help of a lot of friends.
And so what does that look like outside of the fact that you're not the product, right? Which I think, I talked to Ryan Levesque about this, and that was one of his big pieces of advice. He's like, hey, look, if you're going to build something, a community, like, make it where you're not the product. I have not succeeded at that, unfortunately, but it makes sense, right? Because to your point, you can't design it. If you're the ringleader and you have to be there and you have to do everything, then it's by design, you are creating I hate to use this word, but like a wealth prison, right? Mm-hmm. Like exactly, yeah, you got to show up to make things happen, or else nothing happens, right? So that was I think that was a really smart design. But what does that look like for you when you think of like this business? Like, tactically, what does that look like? How often are you guys working? Like, what have you done to say, I'm going to be a family man first and businessman second?
Yeah. So the first thing was, and this is great counsel from, again, friends of mine who from the get-go were helping me build this the right way. First was setting my schedule, when I wanted to work and when I didn't want to work. And then all the decisions became easy. It's like, if it doesn't fit into that, the answer is no. So I don't schedule anything on Mondays. I don't schedule anything on Fridays. And I only schedule calls Tuesday through Thursday between 10 and 4. Now, I can never say that's 100% of the time, but I would say it's 98% true in my life. That what I just shared with you is 98% true. There's always going to be some exception. Somebody would bust me if they looked at my calendar, like, "Bah, there's an appointment on a Monday," you know. But it's like, yes, there's probably times when I've failed and broken my own rule, but that's been the core. This skeleton and the structure has been that. When it comes to the business side of things and like how we're operating, whenever we would decide on a new program, again, it was, hey, John, can you run that? Can you do that? I'm like, if it has to be me, we're not going to do it. So all the programs we built, like, we have a program called the Summit Series. It's every 8 weeks. We run this online event. It's really great. It's 100 guys, all online, 4 hours, deep dive, immersive experience. That entire thing is designed and facilitated by a guy named Steve Burchard. He literally does everything. Him and his team, they design the manual, the handouts, the agenda. He runs the entire thing from top to bottom. I wasn't even on, you know, a couple of the summits this year. I didn't even attend. I was just doing other things. And I love what he's up to and I love what they're doing. But that, it's just so beautiful to see things operating outside of where I needed to be there, or even I need to cast a vote, just putting, you know, I learned about A players. That was the other piece, was like surrounding yourself with amazing people. There are things that your audience knows, the things they've heard before. They're also easy to talk about and not do.
Oh yeah.
Easy to talk about. But when we do put them into place, when we create frameworks and structures and systems, when we hire people and tell them part of your role is to create a system that you can hand off to somebody else and then actually do it, that's been the key to growing this.
So with like Steve works for Front Row Dads. Is he?
He's a contractor. So he facilitates these events for other companies. And I would say, especially where we are, like at the level that Front Row Dads, where we may do $1 million in revenue this year. Mm-hmm. That's our target. That's our goal. You know, last year we did $500,000 in revenue and we're trending to that right now, but we're only doing that with one full-time employee and a couple of contractors who all step in their area of specialties.
Wow. That's amazing, man. I'm so pumped to hear that it's growing like that. And so are you guys, so for you, when you start thinking about this business, and obviously the idea is, it's, you're creating a community that serve, to your point, was the community you wanted to be a part of, but you're doing it in a way where it doesn't become a job, where it's something that serves you from an entrepreneurial perspective, become something that financially serves your family, but at the same time, you still own your time. So when you start thinking about like big picture, long term, are you, what are your thoughts for, you know, this group and how, where do you want to take it?
So I see us at 10,000 members by 2032. I see somebody else being in charge of scaling it to that level. I think that within the next 2 years, we'll hire a CEO or a COO or some combination of leadership that would be able to scale this to that level. And I don't think it's going to be me. I don't think that's my area of expertise. I don't even really want to do that personally. I'd love to see the company do that. I don't want to be the one to drive it there. I would like to be in the seat of podcast host, relationship builder. I would like to be out there experimenting, testing all these models, talking with all these people that we bring into the community. And I would like to be one of the members, growing and learning with all the guys. My boys are 12 and 7. I've got years in front of me, and I want to be a great dad. So I want to be a great dad, and then I want to run a great business. And the truth is, if the business never grew beyond this point, that would make me sad, because I think healthy things grow, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't need it to, because all of my needs are being met right now, financially and emotionally. And I'm like the wealthiest from a time perspective that I've ever been in my life. Beautiful point this morning. I got a phone call from Tatiana. She literally had an allergic reaction on the way to school. She had to pull over from driving the kids. And she's like, "Can you come get me?" And I was like, "Yes." And then I went and I picked her up, and then I sat with her for a while, and then I took her out for breakfast to make sure she was okay. And we called a couple of our doctor friends, and I spent 2 hours with her this morning, Darius, because I could, because I've created a life where my calendar's not packed. And I felt it this morning. I'm like, thank God. Like, did I want to do that this morning? I had other shit that I wanted to do, you know, like, was it an inconvenience? Yeah. But my girl needed me, and I was able to go and support her. That to me is like the best thing. I attend all my kids' stuff. Like when it's in the middle of the day, I go, there's a play at 2 o'clock at their school. I'm in, you know, it's just beautiful to have this room to play with my family now. And to me is the biggest victory of all.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so when you start to think about, you know, and you know, you and I both grew up, we're about the same age, with, you know, in the 80s, and you know, our dads came from a generation where very few. I can't think of a dad that had these types of schedules, right? I can think of dads that coach sports, right? Sure. Like that was kind of like the way I remember interacting with people's dads. My dad was like, dude, worked 6 days a week and was pretty MIA from like a dad perspective, and there financially, but not, he was not like a, like, I don't remember having like the moments I'm having with my kids, like my dad owed me. And it was, you know, generationally, he was different, and culturally he's from a different country. So he was just doing what he knew. But even when I think of my friends, who culturally their parents were American. My dad was Persian, so it's a different culture, but generationally, maybe they're a little younger than my dad. Even then, it was pretty, like, the only person I could think of, I have one friend who I thought of whose dad and him had kind of like the thing that you're describing. His dad was a teacher. He was our wrestling coach. So he was there coaching us, and he was a teacher, and he had his summers off, and they'd go ride motorcycles and go to the river. And like, he was always around. And I remember, like, I'm like, man, I wish teachers made more money, then I'd go be, you know, but like, right. I couldn't think of anybody else. Right. Everyone else was, their parents were like gone. We were the last, you know, we're Gen X latchkey kids, both parents working. What do you think? Like, I don't know. How do you think about that when you start thinking about the men in your community and how are they changing the way they're behaving to have those moments of front row moments with their kids?
Yeah. So first, want to honor the fact that there's a lot of men out there facing a lot of different situations in their life. You might have a job that you need to do right now that doesn't give you the flexibility. I honor you for that. You might have a medical condition yourself, or your spouse does, or your kids do, that you're spending a lot of time with doctors and in hospitals. And you just like, there's a lot of people out there who have circumstances and who have lives that do not sound like where I'm presenting that my life currently is. And I know that at any moment, my situation could be taken away from me. I'm only in control of so much of what I currently have. And I realize that part of it is by design and hard work, and part of it is pure luck. So let me just say that I recognize all those factors. I think that what we attract, Darius, to our group are people who are like, oh man, like not a lot of guys are like this. So I got to join Front Row Dads because these dudes are my people. Like I want that freedom and that flexibility, like things that John's talking about and who they are. That's that group doesn't exist out there. There's a lot of different dad groups out there too, but they all tend to have an angle. Like one is for a church group and it's has a highly religious element to it. Another one is these guys are a little bit more, you can start labeling, and I don't necessarily want to do that, but it's this type of guy, right? In this group, this type of guy in this group. People join our group. They go, oh, family men with businesses, not businessmen with families. Man, the minute I heard that, I was like, that's my crew right there. And I just knew that was my crew. I think that what happens is, like they do in business, and they know this because a lot of people study this. They've read tons of business books, not a lot of parenting books, but tons of business books. They understand vision. They understand making a strategic plan. You and I did for Front Row Dads SWOT analysis. You led us through strategic planning, which I'm so grateful for. And I want everybody to know that Rachel actually said to me yesterday, Darius, the true story, she goes, God, I really miss that time with Darius where we're visioning big stuff and figuring out what levers to pull and where's our opportunities, et cetera. But we don't do that for our families, really. Most people don't. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might get core values done for their business, but they don't get them done for their family. A lot of people plan their year for their business, but they don't plan well for their family. And all we want to do is create space and an opportunity for men to do that for their family, but by other men being examples. Great statement made by a guy yesterday who joined Front Row Dads. He said, John, what I hear that your group provides, tell me if I get this right, John, is influence and ideas. I go, that's it, man. It's you become like the people you surround yourself with. That's the influence part. And when you're around them, you're seeing these ideas. You're like, oh, that guy did it like this. That guy did it like that. Oh, here's how he pulled it together. And you're just seeing these ideas, both of how they failed and recovered, right? How they repaired a broken marriage or a broken relationship with their kid, and how they move forward. And that to me is what the whole thing is about. It's models and examples, because there's 1,000 ways to succeed in business. There's 1,000 ways to succeed at home. But if we can get some models and some examples, and we can ask ourselves, what feels right to me? What can I try out this week, this month, this year? To me, that's victory. And that's what a lot of guys are doing. They're just trying on different models. And then they're being held to this. Here's another last thing I'll say. They're being held to this standard, but we don't have a lot of guys around us, a litmus test of like, what does success look like? And at our last retreat, one of our guys said, Front Row Dads is the litmus test for fatherhood. I was like, well said, you know, that's exactly right.
Hey gang, Darius Mashaza here. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. So listen, I know we have a lot of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business owners out there that listen to the show. And right now, if you're one of those folks and you're doing, let's call it a bare minimum of 7 figures and above in your business, then what I'd like to do is give you an offer right now. How would you like to get your hands on the frameworks that I actually used to scale my last company, which started off as a small little 7-figure company, to over $100 million in annual revenue? And I did it in less than 2 years, and I did it without costly growing pains, without the headaches that you usually experience when you are scaling your business. So if you're one of those folks and you're trying to grow your company, but you're finding yourself stuck in that day to day, if you're one of the listeners and you're getting grinded, this is your respite from getting grinded on in your business, you're listening to our show, and you're dealing with the breakdowns, you're dealing with inefficiencies, and you know, you got that firefighter suit on and all the problems lining on your desk, and you're not doing the work you're supposed to be doing, which is working on the business instead of in it, then what I'm about to talk to you about for the next, call it 60 seconds, this is precisely for you. Real quickly, though, if you don't already know this about me, prior to starting the Greatness Machine, I spent 20 years of my life as a founder and CEO of real-world companies. And during that time, I actually grew my companies to over $1.2 billion with a B in bootstrap revenue. In fact, we scaled my last company from 30 to 1,000 employees. And we did it in just 36 months. And we did it all by using a three-step framework that I call my Scale Map method. So that, of course, brings us to the purpose of this here mid-roll ad. Yes, this is what the podcast producers call these things. Recently, I created a 30-minute training. And what it does is it walks you step-by-step through all of my Scale Map method frameworks. And you can watch it right now for free when you go to DariusScale.com. That's my first name, Darius, Scale, S-C-A-L-E.com. And what these frameworks do is they fix, they simplify, and they streamline every single aspect of your business. And they do it without the need for complicated scaling systems that are typically way too difficult and way too time consuming for a busy CEO like you and from like myself was to implement. So if you want a simple and you want a proven path to remove yourself from the day-to-day operations, just like I did, so that you can do what you're supposed to be doing, which is leading your company to record growth without the headaches and without the growing pains, go to DariusScale.com. That's www.DariusScale.com. Watch the short video, and I'll see you guys on the inside. Now, back to the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to your point, there's not a lot of, you know, especially if your niche is business people, right? There's plenty of groups out there where it's all about the grind and the hustle and the sacrifice and you know, and then those environments and social media and culture, you know, like not all, but like in large, rewards financial success, rewards becoming a captain of industry. We don't hear about Elon Musk being a world-class dad. Probably because he fucking sucks as a dad. I don't know. I can only assume that the guys, if all I hear is him sleeping on the Tesla Gigafactory, that means he didn't wake up and have breakfast with his kids or put him to bed. And I doubt if he left to go do that. I mean, I'm just guessing at this point, but I've not heard one story about him being a great dad. I've heard tons of great stories about him being an amazing visionary and, you know, world-class, like, you know, next level inventor, right? So, like, who's the world's best dad? Like, have you seen that in the media? I haven't.
Well, yeah, a couple things I want to say about this. First, if you go search the word dad on Google, it's depressing what you see populate after that word, right? It's dad bod, it's dad jokes, it's everything about the dad part that our society kind of jokes about, where it everything's uncool if you make it associated with being a dad. And I want to rebel against that so much. I want to fight against that so much, because I would love for, when people type in Google, for the search to be around dad wisdom, dad strategies, right? Dad rock stars, whatever we can then reframe our thinking to be about what an ideal father does look like. Because you nailed it, dude. Here's another one. I'm listening to a podcast the other day, and it's somebody that worked with Steve Jobs very closely. And in the interview, they were asking about, hey, what had happened when Steve did go on vacation? What was that like for the team? Did he totally bow out? And they'd say, yeah, he was bowed out for about 24 hours. And then he's on the phone constantly with us from his vacation with his family, driving the train, ideas, strategies. These are the things you hear. And I'm not there. I don't know how great of a dad he was. And being a great dad is subjective. We might agree on some things, you know, but it's not my definition of what a great dad sounds like. I sure as hell hope people look at me and say, John was an amazing father and he built a great business. I think that's how bios should be written. And it's why sometimes in our marketing material, you'll see family man, et cetera. Because we want that to be the definition. It was actually something we got from David Packard, Hewlett Packard. And in his at his funeral, they put rancher, et cetera. And his bio is super impressive, right? All of what he built, all of what he did. But it just said rancher, et cetera. It was him on a tractor, right? In a picture. That's awesome. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if at my funeral, it just said family man, et cetera. And that was it. And who cares that I ran an ultra marathon or that I wrote a book over here about the charity or that, right? I just want it to say family man, et cetera. That's what I want at my funeral, Darius. Like that's what I hope happens. And I'm a work in progress for that.
I love that, man. I read this article or quote, but it was a quote. I think it said that people at your funeral who don't know you will talk about your achievements, and people at your funeral who love, who do know you will talk about how much they love you. Mm. Right. And so like, it was, I just butchered that quote a little bit, but it was something to that extent, which makes is sense. Like, what do you want people talking about your funeral? If they don't know you, they'll talk about your achievements. Oh, he wrote this book and ran this fucking marathon and this, that, and the other. And but the people that care about you are going to talk about how funny you were and how much love you showed them and how you like cared about
how them. You made them feel,
how you made them feel. Right. Yeah. And so like, what was it? Not Charlie Munger, but Warren Buffett says, you know, it's a tragedy for people to have a lot of money and have no relationships. Yeah. Right. And that he, but he sees it all too often that people will die with all this money, but like no one gives a shit about them. And he's like, that's a life that wasn't worth living, you know? And it's interesting to hear the world, one of the richest people on earth say that. Right. And they're like, yeah, like, what do you, you know, you follow Naval Ravikant at all?
Yeah. Yeah. Great guy.
So I just became like a super fan of his.
Yeah.
And I read the Almanac of Naval Ravikant.
Yeah.
And he has this quote, which has been like my, it's probably, I should just make it into a t-shirt and wear it because I say it all the time, which is, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Right.
Right. And so you start thinking about this, which is, what prize are you trying to win? Are you trying to be the person at the Met Gala that your kids barely know? Or are you trying to be, you know, the person who your kid runs and jumps in your arms and makes up a word for hugging? You know, my son calls hugs, and he runs and does
it's adorable, man.
He does super huggles. And he started doing this when he was like three. And I still, dude, he's almost nine. And I, and he's a big kid. He's over 100 pounds. And I'm like, dude, I'm pumped for it.
Yeah.
Like, and I know one day he's not going to want to do it, but I'm soaking it up, man.
Oh man, it's so cool. You know that I'm just about to teach my dad how to hug me, Darius.
Really?
Dude, it's so funny. I like having a conversation last night and we were talking about my dad was visiting. And by the way, even if he's listening to this, this is a great setup. I'm about to teach you how to hug me, dad. Here's the deal. He's in town, he's visiting. And I notice, first of all, he says to me, is there anything that we need to say to each other? Cause we never know when this is going to be our last time. That's one thing he says. And I'm like, I think we're pretty good, but I think he planted a seed. And the more I started thinking about it, I was like, oh, when he hugs me, he keeps his elbow in a little bit. So like our chests don't touch.
Oh,
right. It's like this, you know, this elbow that just protects his body from my body. And I'm going to, next time I see him, I'm going to be like, dad, I want to teach you how to hug me. I want you to take your arms, put them around. I want our chests to touch. I want you to squeeze me like you mean it for at least 3 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it. And I realize how, even as I say that out loud, I go, ah, there's some guy out there going, you cracking up giggling, like John's going to teach his dad how to hug him, you know, how weak. And then I just think, you know, who the fuck cares what anybody thinks? Because that's really what I want. And I want to be brave enough and courageous enough to tell my dad directly, this is what I want. Whether or not he accommodates will be his decision. Right. Of course, I think he will. You know, I think he's like, yeah, I'm game. I think it'll be difficult for him because there's something in his body that he is trying to protect himself from getting too close. That's likely a wound. That's likely trauma. That's likely something in his childhood or in his life. But I realize I'm doing a disservice to our relationship by not just saying that out loud. And yeah, it's not that big of a deal. But I want to get that out because I don't want that to be unsaid.
Yeah. You know, I love that, man. You know, what I started doing a couple of years ago, I was having like really bad anxiety. So one of the huggle thing that came from my son was, so this is 3 years ago. Yeah. It was almost 3 years ago to the month. So my son was 5 then. And I realized the one thing that like calmed me down was him hugging me. Like it brought my anxiety down, right? That exchange of oxytocin. And so this goes out to John Roman's dad. So I started saying heart to heart huggle, give me a heart to heart. And so I started, this is the thing I do with my kids. I tell heart to heart. And that was a really interesting way to teach them how to hug, where I said, it's heart to heart, man. We mash hearts against each other.
Yeah.
You know, and that's every night before it goes to bed. I'm like heart to heart, man. and I get my heart to heart, and it's I'm like getting like a little emotional right now even thinking about it. But it's this thing where, you know, to your point, I think as dads, I forget what it was. I was watching something, but they were saying, you know, there's pride in growing your children up. And I also think dads growing their sons up, it's toughening them up, turn them into a man. You know, these things that when you start to look at what is the process for that, it is around being tough on them. It is around not showing them vulnerability. It is around, you know, at least that if I was to just like characterize it, right? It's around making them work hard. And some of these things are super valuable, man. Like, I think it's good to teach your kids to overcome adversity. I think it's good to teach your children to work hard. I think it's good to teach them that life's not fair. And the only way you can do that is by letting them experience it, right? But the inverse of that is what I'm talking about right now, which is, hey, show vulnerability and show love and connection. And hey, it's okay to like be, express yourself when you're frustrated in a way that might be perceived as weak. Right. And so like, how old is your dad?
77.
Yeah. So my father would be like 82 if he was still alive. He passed away when I was 22 years old. Half my life ago, my dad passed away. Yeah. And so, you know, these are men that were not, these were men that were brought up who with their fathers were like in World War II.
Yeah.
You know, or even prior to that, right? Mm. So this is just a different generation. I feel like right now, to your point, when you said the thing about Googling the word dad, I fucking hate dad jokes.
Yeah.
Like these dads are, so you're not allowed to be vulnerable. You're not allowed to be a human. Oh, and by the way, you're a fucking doofus who's not cool. Yeah. You know, like, I'm like, to your point, I'm like, I think of all my buddies and I think this is a mindset. Some of them do fall into that camp. They've allowed themselves to like be caricatured. And I'm like, not that close with those people. I'm like, yeah, you go do that, dude. Like, I don't agree with that. But most of the men I know that are like, going down the path you're talking about, which is how do I put my family first? How do I be a better husband, better father? How do I actually like show up in a way where I'm teaching my kids how to be better human beings? Yeah, dude, these are cool motherfuckers. Like I make a lot of jokes that are not dad jokes. Like, and so do they. And I'm like, no, these are not safe for work jokes.
You know,
like no one is ever going to fucking accuse me of making a dad joke. Okay. And I'm a dad.
That's great. That's funny, man.
But yeah. So like when you start thinking about, when you start to see people evolve in this way and what you're building at Front Row Dads, what is like the biggest, like, what's that first moment where you're like seeing, I mean, obviously they're showing up because they're a type of person, but what's that first moment where you're seeing that this work and this, the things we're talking about right now and the community you're building is actually like creating this exponential effect? What's that moment where you see it with those members when they first show up?
Wow. You know, that's, I could take this a lot of different directions, and I'm going to just share some ideas. I'm going to just share a couple of things that come to mind. One of the things that I see happen when men join our group is just simply more time with their family. Something we recently came up with. In fact, you and I were talking about this. We created this dad quiz. And one of the ideas around the dad quiz was to identify blind spots. And actually where that came from was an early conversation with my buddy, Tim Nikolaev, where I asked him what makes a great friend. And he said, a great friend is somebody who can help you identify your blind spots, knows you so well, sees you, and then can help point out these blind spots. To know what you don't even know, you don't know. And we went for lunch and we're like, what blind spot do I have? And what do I see in you? And we had this deep conversation. And I think that was the seed that ultimately was 5 years ago that led to what we just put out recently, this dad quiz, which is, what's your number one dad blind spot? Now, there are five things that we identified when we looked at all these hundreds of members that we've served. And we said, where do they go? Oh my God, that was the thing. And then they actually figure out how to use their superpowers, their zone of genius, their unique abilities that they've been putting to work at the office, but they now learn how to use them at home, and they make the biggest shift. They make the biggest leap, the transformation. And here's what the five of them are, the five areas that are the blind spots. So one is around time. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a blind spot where you might be aware that you're not home with your kids, right? That you're at the office a lot. You might be unaware of just how negatively that's impacting. And you might be unaware of your own reasoning in your mind of how you just keep selling yourself on the fact that you've got one more busy season to get through and all the excuses that you've learned to master why you keep having the same problem. Because if you keep having the same problem, a system has been built, a process in your life has been built that you keep executing, and mostly unconsciously. So the second one would be focus. You're at home, but you're on your phone. You're at home, but your mind is somewhere else. You're solving a problem at work. I'm constantly distracted with my kids. It's a real challenge for me. The next one is EQ. And are you an unpredictable personality with your kids? Do your kids find themselves saying things like, I never know what version of dad I'm going to get? Like, if I say the wrong thing, man, dad could go, you know, is dad in a good mood or a bad mood? How do I play my cards today? Mm-hmm. The next one would be attitude, right? And ultimately this one is, if you've got three kids under 5 years of age and you've got stresses at work, and your wife is maybe, you know, has some postpartum depression, and you're just getting your ass kicked every day. Your head is spinning. You are new to this, you know, just, and you're young and you're, I mean, you just got right. And you're not having any sex because you've got three kids under five, and there's all these change, and you can't do the things you used to do to take care of yourself. Dude, you might be defeated. You went from like this optimistic, when I'm a dad, I'm gonna do everything. And then all of a sudden you're just like getting kicked in the nuts every day. So that's a challenge, you know? And then there's connection, which is you might be home and your phone might be turned off, but you're just not connecting with your kids. They love army men and you want to go throw the ball outside and you're just not lining up. These are the areas where I find that most men come in, they identify something. And look, we could almost all of us say that we could work in every one of those areas. They probably affect us all.
Sure.
But there is a lead domino there. There is one that if you were to work on would be the lead domino for potentially making the biggest impact in your life. What we want to do is help guys figure out what that is and then give them the strategies so that they can go do it. And one of the strategies that I would say comes up first is, can you be present with your family? That covers really the time and focus categories, which are, I think, two of the most popular. And that's where they make transformational leaps forward.
Yeah, I love that. So that's if someone wanted to go take that quiz to see like where their blind spots are, how would they do that?
TheDadQuiz.com. TheDadQuiz.com.
Okay, cool. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes so listeners go check that out. TheDadQuiz.com. I actually took it. So and it's pretty cool. And I highly recommend, I was the absentee dad, damn it.
Yeah.
And you're talking right now. I'm like, God damn it. I'm so good at filling up my time.
But, absolutely.
You know,
yeah, 100%.
The other stuff I feel like I'm pretty good on, you know, I have a good friend of mine. He's a CEO and he's a client of mine actually too, down in, Atlanta. He runs a really successful company, and his dad works 6 days a week. Dad was an immigrant. He came on a rowboat from Cuba. He was actually a past guest on the show, Eddie Perez. His dad rowboated in from Cuba. Jeez. You want to talk about fucking hardship? Fucking rowboated in on a fucking rowboat from Cuba to the United States. I mean, that is gnarly. So he's like one of the most humble people I know, and he's a badass. And Eddie's like, look, you know, he's always like, whenever I feel like things are going tough, I'm like, I could be on a rowboat.
Yeah.
but he said, you know, my dad worked all the time, you know, but I had these moments with my dad, and it was, sometimes it was me sweeping the floor of a construction site. Cause his dad was like a general contractor. He's like, sometimes it was me in the truck on a Saturday with him. He's like, you know, my dad worked hard for our family, but we had these minutes together where we and his dad's his father passed away, unfortunately, a while ago, and he's got a tattoo of his dad on the arm, and his dad's his hero. So this, so to your point earlier, it's not everyone has not everyone's time wealthy, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. You
know, like that's actually like the biggest privilege to have that.
Right? It is absolutely the biggest privilege. Yeah. When you are trying to put food on the table and a roof over your head, we're having a very different conversation than the conversation we're having where, you know, our average member is probably six-figure earner, right? Has created some wealth in his life, might be in an area where he is. His number one challenge is not, can I keep my family safe today? You know, they're not in a war-torn country. Those are situations that are tough and tragic. And yeah, you have to do what you have to do to take care of your family. If your job is to hunt because everybody's starving, then you hunt as long as you need to get food.
Yeah. But I don't want to discount that, even though those are maybe the circumstances for most people, or you're a person like me that like has the hungry ghost that needs to be fed, that I'm fighting through and I'm working through right now. But I find myself on that track of finding ways to fill up my cup of being busy. So that's why when I take the dad quiz, I get the absentee dad. But when I'm with my kids, I'm a moment maker, right? And I'm in it. And I'm phones put away. And I'm like asking them questions and teaching them. And like, I'm in the car. I'm not sitting there like on the phone. I don't get on the phone when I'm in the car with the kids.
Yeah.
You know, or my son's on the phone at breakfast and I'm like, hey, bud, we don't have phones at breakfast. Why don't we have a conversation? So, yeah. And you know, probably I'm hard on myself. Maybe I'm not an absentee dad, but, you know, like I would want to have more of the John Roman schedule if I could make
it. Well, you're not totally absent. We know that, right? It's like, we know that. I've seen you. I've been at your house with your kids, right? You're a great dad. But it's just a tendency, right? A leaning. We might tend to be more active in work. And if we're going to slip somewhere, it's probably like overbooking our schedule.
Right.
That's really what it's about. Dude, I got to say something real fast that I think you'll appreciate. You know, I was doing a webinar with Hal on June 15th for his Miracle Morning audience. And we were recording a podcast yesterday. And we talked about something that was so important, which is he and I are constantly optimizing. Oh, we should take our kids to a third world country to make sure they're not entitled. And let's do this activity with our kids. And yeah, you know, I'm reading this book and then I'm writing notes on the back of pictures. And we're constantly doing that shit. But he goes, John, you know, the thing that's crazy is, he goes, this is Hal speaking. He goes, I love my dad. Love my dad. We have this amazing relationship. He goes, my dad didn't read a single book on parenting. He didn't do a single one of the strategies that we're even talking about. But the thing is, he loved me so much. And he was my biggest fan. He's like, I'm in your corner. I'm just like rooting you on to become the best version of yourself. And he said, I just want to remind everybody that regardless of how much you're working or whether or not you slip and you're on your phone, have some grace for yourself and to ease up on yourself a little bit. Like, look, yes, be a great dad. Hold yourself to a high standard. Sometimes friends need to call you out. You're selling yourself short. All that's true too. And also some of you might be beating yourselves up relentlessly where that's not healthy either. That's not a good example. Because if what your kids are going to do is model what you're doing, Beating yourself senseless is not the thing you want your kids to do to themselves in your life. So don't do it to yourself. Easier said than done. I do it to myself. But I just wanted to mention that because I think it's important.
Yeah, no, that's a huge, huge comment. And you know, one of my awakenings to that point is that 99% of the parenting isn't the intentional things you do. It's the kids watching you behave.
That's it. 100%.
So how am I behaving? Yes, part of that is my presence with them and giving them focused attention and trying to schedule one-on-one trips and taking them fishing and shit like that. Like, and by the way, the last two things I said, I'm bad at, right? But my realization was they're watching me. They're watching how do I treat people. They're watching how do I treat their mom. They're watching do I give their mom hugs and kisses. Do they watch how I show care when I make them a pizza or make them breakfast. They watch how I talk to humans around me. They watch every little thing you do, and they're going to model you, and that's how they're learning. It's not that. What is it? 95% of all communication is nonverbal. It's not that pep talk I gave them on a bridge where we were fishing on the dock that one trip, and we do that all the time. Yeah, that's part of that modeling too. And if you could do more of that, great. But it's all the in between stuff. It's my kids saying like, Dad, we're going to have to get two more cussing jars. Because you say the F word all the time. And by the way, they laugh. They know that I know. They know that I'm not going to change.
Yeah, yeah.
But they also know that I know it's not appropriate for them to say it too.
That's funny.
You know, total double standard. I tell them it's double standard. When you're 18, you can say fuck all you want.
It's so funny. Did I ever tell you the story about Tiger and I camping when he was like at a porta potty in the middle of the night? Did I ever tell you this one? This is hysterical. So he's probably 10 and we're camping and we go up to this. So we go to this field, kind of elevated field away from our campsite, and we take a bucket and a seat and we're taking a shit outside of the where the porta potty is, because the porta potty is just terrible. And he's like, do I just do it right here? I go, there's nobody around. Like, look, there's nobody. And right as he sits down and he starts going to the bathroom, this car starts driving down the road. And he's like, oh my God. And I'm like, dude, don't worry about it. You're in the middle of a car is not going to see. Car can't see anything. That car turns in, shines its lights directly at Tiger. And he's sitting down on this toilet. And he just looks around and he goes, oh, fuck. And he's 10. And he looks back at me with these wide eyes. Like, I can't believe that car is there. And I can't believe I just said this in front of my dad. And I looked at him and I go, it's all right, buddy. That was appropriate.
Yeah. You literally just used it. Textbook. Right.
It was perfect. We still laugh about that to this day.
Oh, dude, yeah. That's amazing. Man, God, it's funny. Like, I'm like, I could do 5 hours of a show with you, but yeah, I know we're coming to the end here. So, hey, look, man, like you're building such an amazing thing with Front Row Dads. And I'm so pumped to get to, you know, be a part of it. The little I am, I'm actually thinking the whole time, I'm like, which group am I going to quit join Front Row Dads? Like, and that sucks because I have great groups, but I'm like, I'm fucking going to quit one of them. So I'm going to be joining. That's my commitment to myself. What, where do people, if people want to learn more, or I know you have a big conference coming up, like why don't we give our listeners some ways to connect with you and to learn more?
Yeah. Well, if they're listening to this and you like to listen to stuff, then the podcast has some amazing conversations with, you know, we just interviewed a guy, Rich Christensen, and he talked about, you know, rites of passage and how he raised 5 boys who all built $1 million businesses before they were 18. It's an incredible story, right? Did you have him on your show?
No. He spoke at my conference at MIT.
Okay.
And with Garrett Gunderson.
Yeah. So it's funny. I just saw Garrett do comedy here. He was in Austin and he did a comedy show. It was great.
I've seen a little bit of his comedy. That's cool.
Rich is a great conversation. You know, when we're talking health, we had Zach Bush on. When we're talking about, we also had Ben Greenfield on talking about health. We got all these interesting people who we chat with, right? Hal and I have talked about morning routines with kids, and Mike McCarthy, who wrote The Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. That's a great place to go. I would also, and everything is hosted at frontrowdads.com. The podcast is called Front Row Dads. From a live event perspective, I mean, I think there's no better way to change than a deep immersion experience. So we've got a 3-day event here in Austin, December 2nd through the 4th. And we'll have all that information at frontrowdads.com as well. And if somebody, you know, wants to reach out, they should just, you know, we make it easy to be found. So if through any social channels or, you know, through the website, you can just reach out. You can join the membership through the website. All of it's really through frontrowdads.com, but you know, ping me, ping my team. Like we want to help. That's why we're here.
Yeah. Well, you guys, there's so many different ways to connect, and also the dad quiz, check that out. It's a cool way to get some resources from you guys. And all the above. And if you want to hear a really funny episode of Front Row Dad podcast, you should listen to my episode.
Yeah, that's right.
That was some funny shit.
Which I still quote you on to this day. So I won't tell people what I quote you on, but I will say, go listen to the show and you'll learn.
I was thinking this morning, I was like, you know, I really need to do like a hook in the beginning of all my podcasts and I realized I don't do that. And I was like, I really have to do like a synopsis of the show with like a hook to get him to listen to the show. And I was like, that has a hook right out of the bat.
Oh, it definitely has a hook. Definitely has a hook.
You will be drawn into that show with
might be a left hook, but it's a hook.
It's a hook. It's a move of Mike Tyson. Oh man, John Roman. Appreciate you, brother. Love you. So excited to have you in my life. And thank you for doing the show today.
Thanks, man. Oh, every conversation we've had is they're great reminders of truth in our lives. And there's also great exploration of possibility. It's a great combo. So thanks, man.
Thank you so much. You guys, listeners, see you guys until next time. Peace out. We love you.
You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Listen, if you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform that you're tuning in on so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. We have tons of great people coming on, and we're stoked to have you here to enjoy it with us. Leave us a review. Tell us what you love most about this particular episode. We love getting the reviews. We love to see what you guys love most. And if this particular episode, you know, made you think of someone who's leveling up in their business and in their life, print screen, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers. And after all, we're all here to support and grow with each other. And in case you want to see some of the fun behind the scenes shots or some of the things that we're doing, I'm actually writing about this in my weekly newsletter. Go to www.therealdarius.com and subscribe to my newsletter. We're talking about fun things like business and life and mindfulness and cryptocurrencies and gosh, I don't even know, everything and anything, but it's tons of fun stuff I write about. I try to get it out on a weekly basis. You can subscribe at www.therealdarius.com. And with that said, look, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We're out of here. See you guys on the next one.